Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and tonight's guest are not necessarily those of this radio network, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Listener discretion is advised. Now lock your doors, open your minds, and prepare yourself to go
beyond the edge.
Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Surgeon.
Go flight.
Ecom.
We're go flight.
GNC.
We're go.
Telmu.
Go.
Control.
Go flight.
Procedures.
Go.
Inco.
Go.
FAO.
We are go.
Network.
Go.
Recovery.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It has now cleared the tower.
Lock your doors. Lock your doors. Lock your doors. Lock your doors. Open your minds. Beyond the Edge Radio is back. You're tuned into the best damn alternative talk on the planet. BTE Radio. Sunday nights and BTE Radio. Life doesn't get any better than this. Welcome back to BTE Radio. Get ready, cause the sh** is about to get real. Often replicated, never duplicated, or the real deal, baby. BTE Radio. Mama warned you there'd be shows like this. Beyond the Edge Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio. If you're not listening, you're just stupid.
And good evening and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. Happy Sunday. It is the last Sunday in February. It's the 22nd, and tonight is Oscar night. And instead of watching the Oscars and rooting for your favorite movie, I think you'd rather be listening to tonight's show because we've got a great show in store for everybody tonight. We are wrapping up Cryptid Month here at BTE Radio, and we've got some lovely ladies joining us at the bottom of this hour. We've got Kathy Strain, Monica Rollins, and Melissa Hovey-Larson joining us. They're going to be talking about their work in the subject of Bigfoot as we wrap up BTE Radio's Cryptid Month. It's going to be a great show. I'm glad you joined us tonight. And we have with us on the line our last contestant in the search for a new co-host. His name is Fred Cracky. Good evening, Fred. How are you doing tonight?
Good evening, Eric. I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing well. It's been a great week. Looking forward to tonight's show. And welcome to the program. I know you're excited to be here.
Very excited. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Fred. Tell us your interest in the paranormal, why you want to be a co-host here at BTE Radio. Fill us in on all that good stuff.
Gotcha. Well, paranormal's always been intriguing. Can't say I've had any really profound experiences, but I was lucky enough to take a tour of the Queen Mary a couple of years back and had some subtle little things happened that were pretty interesting, like taking a picture that was totally clear when I first took it, and then looking back on it on my phone, and it looked like the room was filled with fog, little wow. Things like that really kind of piqued my interest to the next level. And then I've always had an interest in cryptozoology. I was lucky enough to live in South Africa for a few years, and when you're in Kruger National Park and you see a snake where his head is on one side of the road and his tail is on the other side of the road, you really can't help but wonder what else is out there.
Yeah.
So just kind of having an eclectic interest in everything. And, of course, Bigfoot. I mean, what can you say? Bigfoot's the man. You can't help but be interested in him.
Yeah, yeah, and you can keep your snakes, buddy. I'm not a fan of snakes.
I hear you, man. Same here. And,
especially
oh, yeah,
that
and of
big.
Course, well, I want to be a co-host of the show. Always had an interest in radio, actually working towards an associate's degree in broadcasting at the moment. And that combined with interest in paranormal cryptozoology stuff, as well as your show being an awesome show, it just appeared to be a great opportunity.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. That's very kind of you to say. And we are glad that you're here tonight. You are the last contestant in the contest for the new co-host. Now, for folks that want to vote for Fred or for Marie or for Walt or Josh or Justin or Aldo or any of the great co-hosts we've had on the program, seven of them, and Mark filled in as a guest co-host. We appreciate Mark Johnson from Unknown Origins Radio doing that. But if you want to vote for any of the contestants, voting begins tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right after the show. You can go to our website, which is beyondtheedgeradio.com is our website. You can vote there. There's a widget there to vote for one of the co-hosts that you like, and you can vote often. You can also go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/beyondtheedgeradio, and you can vote there. And you can also email me. If you don't want to vote on one of those widgets, you can send me an email to beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com and tell me who your favorite co-host is and who you'd like to see be the new co-host here at BTE Radio. So best of luck to you, Fred. Best of luck to all the candidates and contestants. And just a quick note of thanks for your interest in being a new co-host. We had quite a number of people that wrote in and messaged me, and even after the deadline, people were still asking, how can I be a co-host? Well, I appreciate your interest, that really means a lot that people are interested in being part of the show. So even if you don't win the contest, don't despair, because we have some other great positions that you might be able to fill. And what I'm talking about is we're looking for a new paranormal news correspondent. We're going to be relaunching that segment every other month, starting with April the 26th. Amy Perry did a great job as our former paranormal news correspondent. I did hear back from her. Thank you, Amy, if you're listening. Unfortunately, Amy's schedule is so busy that she's not able to return to the show to take over that role again. But we are going to look for a new correspondent to come on April 26th. And the first contestant is Chris Nicastro, and he'll be filling that position on April the 26th, reading the paranormal news. Then 2 months later, we'll do it again. That'll be in June. We'll have another news segment, and so on. Every 2 months, we'll do a news segment with probably a different paranormal news correspondent. So even if you don't get the position of co-host, there's still an opportunity for that. Plus, we always need backup co-hosts, because you never know when the future co-host might get sick or can't make it, and we need a fill-in, so keep that in mind as well. So a lot of good stuff that you can still participate in. But, as I said, the voting for tonight's contest begins at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. You can go to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com, our Facebook page, facebook.com/beyondtheedgeradio, or you can go to our email address, beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com, and send me a message who you'd like to hear as the new co-host. So best of luck to you, Fred, and to all our contestants.
Thank you, Eric.
Now, some other news, some announcements, some housekeeping stuff, a couple updates on some events, and then we'll jump into tonight's topic, which is the Ladies of Bigfoot. As I said, we've got Monica, we've got Kathy, and we've got Melissa joining us, and possibly a fourth guest. I talked to her today. I tried to twist her arm a little bit, did a little bit of schmoozing. Hopefully it pays off, because she's one of my favorite female Bigfoot researchers, one of my favorite Bigfoot researchers, and hopefully she'll join us tonight. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for that. Upcoming guests. I've been busy booking guests for the show, and the reason I've been booking guests for the show is, unfortunately, I've got something sad to report. Our booker, Gabriel Cole, who's done such a fantastic job, unfortunately will not be able to resume the role or keep the role of booker, which is, in a way, kind of good news, because her husband's business is taking off and she's needed there to help. So congratulations to her husband and Gabe for the business really taking off and growing. Bad news for us, because we're losing a great booker. She's done such a fantastic job in getting some great guests. But I'm going to resume duties of booking guests on the show. And we have March's lineup set, and we've started booking for April. And I just got an email confirmation like 5 minutes before the show that the guest that I want to come on the program is going to come on the program. So I'm so excited about that. All right, so March 1st, my good friend from Darkness Radio, Tim Dennis, he's going to be joining us, and he's going to be talking about EVPs and the paranormal, his work in EVPs. Now, Tim is a producer at Darkness Radio, and he does some other production for K-Talk Radio out there in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And he's very well versed in sound engineering, and he knows a lot about it. So what a better person to have come on the show than Tim. Plus, he's a heck of a personality, a lot of fun to talk with, and a good friend of mine. So I'm looking forward to having Tim on March 1st. March 8th, we try something different, and we haven't done this before, but this is a suggestion, an email suggestion I got. Gabe booked this gentleman, Daniel Johnson, and we're going to be looking at the paranormal from the Mormon perspective. Apparently, Daniel writes a blog, which is ldsguide.blogspot.com, and he is into the Mormon religion, and he's going to be joining us on March the 8th to talk about their perspective, what they think about the paranormal, their outlook on it, their beliefs, and how they subscribe to the paranormal. So that'll be an interesting show. Looking forward to that. You mentioned the Queen Mary, Fred.
Yes.
Well, we've got a couple guests coming on the show on March 15th, Jamie Davis and Sam Queen. They've written about haunted locations. Now, I know Queen Mary's probably one of the more popular ones out there. That's a really well-known haunted location. But they've written a book about some other haunted locations, being haunted asylums, prisons, sanatoriums, abandoned institutions for the criminally and mentally insane. And they have a book out, which is called Haunted Asylums, Prisons, Sanatoriums, and Inside Abandoned Institutions for the Crazy, Criminal, and Quarantined. So that's going to be interesting to talk with them about those locations and find out what they've learned and what they've researched about those haunted places. What do you think about those places that are abandoned?
I think it's a very interesting angle. There's talking about criminally insane and all things of that nature. There's definitely a lot of dynamic things that happened in the past, and it could definitely lead to some very potentially interesting experiences. It's definitely something that deserves to be researched as well as read about.
Unfortunately, I've never been to one of those locations, like a haunted asylum or a prison. I'd love to go. I've had the opportunity and the invitation to go, but I've just never been able to work it into my schedule. There's one in particular I'd really like to visit, and that's the Mansfield Reformatory over there in Mansfield, Ohio. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard of that. I can't recall specific stories, but I know what I've read has been very interesting.
Yeah, they filmed the Shawshank Redemption there years back, and it's very well noted for its haunted activity, and it's appeared on many, many TV shows like Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, just to name a few.
Nice, very nice. That would be an awesome trip.
I think so, too. But Jamie and Sam join us March 15th to talk about their research in those haunted locations. March 22nd, we've got a gentleman that I've known for quite some time, and at one time I was even a member of his organization. His name is John Kirk, and he is the president, or on the board, I should say, of the British Columbia Scientific Cryptozoology Club. It's BCSSC for short. And he's going to be on, yeah, say that five times fast. He's going to be on March 22nd to talk about his research into the world of cryptozoology and some of these strange cryptids that he's looked into. We had Adam Davies last week, and Adam did a fantastic job talking about his research into cryptids from all around the world. So we'll get John Kirk's perspective and hear his research next week, or I should say March 22nd. And then wrapping up the month of March on the 29th, I'm not going to say who our guest is. It's a big surprise, and I want to leave it at that. But let's just say he's a collector of sorts, and I'll leave it at that. And that should pretty much give away who our guest is going to be on March the 29th. So we've got a great month of guests booked here at BTE Radio. As I said, we're working on April. Two shows in April that are already set and scheduled. Of course, BTE Creature Features begins April 19th with Karen Dolan. She will serve as my co-host for Creature Features. And once a month, we will do that segment where we have a cryptozoologist or a monster hunter or somebody that's looked into strange animals on the show, or we'll read cryptozoology news, anything going on in the world of the cryptids. And, hey, we may even have a cryptid on to join us on the show. You never know. But should be a fun show starting April the 19th. BTE Creature Features begins here at BTE Radio. And then, as I said, about April 26th, BTE Radio's Paranormal News kicks off with our Paranormal News correspondent Chris Nicastro as our first contestant. And we'll be reading Paranormal News and discussing all the strange stories from all around the world. So those things are coming to BTE Radio. Looking forward to it. And if you're a fan of Jim Harold's Paranormal Podcast, I know I am. I listen quite often and really enjoy it. But tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Eastern time, he's going to be doing a webinar on his show for the Paranormal Plus Club. And if you're not a member, you might want to join up because he's got a great guest going to be joining him on the show doing a webinar discussion. And I'll give you two guesses, Fred, who the guest is.
All right. I think he lives in Pennsylvania.
Well, you got that right.
And I got a feeling I'm talking to him right now.
Hey, you win a prize. Very good. Yeah, I'll be Jim's guest tomorrow night for his Paranormal Podcast for the Plus members doing a webinar, Bigfoot 101. It'll be two parts. Tomorrow night's the first part, which is just a look at the history dating back to biblical times all the way through Native American history, through modern history, newspaper accounts, and some of the classic Bigfoot tales. And then the second part will occur in March, on March 23rd, and I'll be talking more about the evidence to support the existence of the creature, some of the known hoaxers, the scientists involved, and how Bigfoot falls into American pop culture. So if you're a fan of Bigfoot and you want to check out the seminar, it's real easy to do. Go to jimherold.leadpages.net/Eric Altman Bigfoot, and you can sign up for that webinar, which takes place tomorrow night at 10 p.m. So that's going to be fun.
Yeah, sounds like a good time.
Yeah, I've enjoyed my interview with Jim. I've been working with him on this for off and on now for a little bit, and it looks like it's going to be a good time. So,
very cool.
A couple upcoming events. I've been talking about this, and everybody's pretty much knows what's going on with these. The 24th annual Bigfoot Conference is set to resume at Salt Fork State Park over in Cambridge, Ohio on April the 18th. The event features guest speakers Todd Neese, Diane Stocking Neese, Dina's not attending this year, Carl L. Johnson, and Dr. Jeff Meldrum. And Don will have testimony from actual Bigfoot eyewitnesses, plus there will be a Friday night meet and greet on the 17th from 6 to 9 p.m. More information can be found at annualbigfootconference.weebly.com. Again, annualbigfootconference.weebly.com. The Paranormal Roundtable will take place on the same date, April the 18th, out in Albertus, Pennsylvania, at the Albertus Area Community Center on West 2nd Street. The event is an all-day event from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. It'll be a roundtable discussion on the subjects of ghosts and hauntings, paranormal, cryptozoology, UFOs, cases of high strangeness in PA. It'll feature such groups as the Ghost Hunters, Incorporated, UFO Research Center of PA, Legend Hunters, and I believe the Keystone Sasquatch, the Keystone Bigfoot group, which the name just escaped me right there. But they'll all be there at the event. You can go to Butch's website, Butch Wachowski. His website is UFORcop.com. And right on the main page, you can learn all about the Paranormal Roundtable, who will be there, and check out that cool event. There are a lot of great events coming, and we'll be more than happy to announce your event when it does roll around. We've got some events into May, June, July, August, September. I'll be speaking at a bunch of events this spring and summer, and they're up on my website, ericaltman.net. And a lot of people asking again about that webinar. If you want to find out about the webinar, you can go to my Facebook page, which is eric.altman1970 on Facebook. You can go to the BTE Radio Facebook page, which I'll put up a link and banner for it tomorrow. Or you can go to my website, ericaltman.net, and there's a banner there to click on to learn how to sign up for the webinar for tomorrow night at 10 p.m. So check that out if you're interested in Bigfoot. Whew, that's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, with some great stuff going on, some very cool lineups.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's always going on, and people send in their requests to announce their events, and I'm more than happy to do so. If you'd like to get your event announced on BTE Radio, you can do so by sending it to me at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. I sound like a broken record. Send it there, and I'll be more than happy to get it announced when we are coming to that date. Or if you want us to say happy birthday to anybody or throw a shout out there to your favorite relative or friend, we can do that too. We're all equal opportunity here.
That's the way to do it.
That's right. That's right. All right. So that gets the announcements out of the way. Again, we've got a great show tonight. We are wrapping up Cryptozoology Month or Cryptid Month here at BTE Radio. We've got some lovely ladies joining us in about 10 minutes from now. We've got Kathy Strain. And she works for the Forestry Department. She's an anthropologist. You can find out all about Kathy by going to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. On the main page, just scroll down. Got a lovely picture there of all the ladies and their bios. Monica Rollins will be joining us, as well as Melissa Hovey-Larson. I've known these three ladies for many, many years. I respect the work they do highly. I was a member of the American Bigfoot Society for a while, thanks to Melissa asking me to be part of it. And these ladies have a lot to talk about, a lot to discuss, and we're going to learn a lot about Bigfoot and their research in Bigfoot tonight when they come on the program.
That sounds like a great show. Looking forward to getting into it with you.
Yeah, it should be a good time with the ladies. Like I said, they're very well versed in the subject. I would put maybe 50 years combined research with all three of them. They really know their stuff, and it's going to be interesting to have a roundtable discussion. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed. As I mentioned, we may have a fourth person joining us at 8:30 tonight. And if she doesn't, that's fine. We'll continue on with the three lovely ladies and Fred and I. And we're not ladies, but you know what I mean. So we're looking forward to that. They'll be coming up in just a few minutes. A couple weeks ago, I don't know if you've heard the podcast of it, but Bob Kramer was on the show. We had him on talking about the Demon of Brownsville Road. Did you catch that episode?
Yes, that was definitely intriguing. A lot of things were happening to that gentleman.
Yeah, he had a lot of history in that house, and as he told us on the show, he still has some things going on there. Well, fortunately, I was able to find a copy of his book, The Demon of Brownsville Road. I picked that up just the other day. I haven't started reading it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. But if you're in Pennsylvania in the Pittsburgh area near the South Hills and you want to check out the house on Brownsville Road, it's still sitting there. It's not torn down. Bob still lives in it, wow. His family, and you can drive by and check it out. I know I had the chance to do so. And I'll be honest with you, Fred, when you drive by and look at the house, it doesn't look that imposing at all.
Wow, that's oddly enough, that's how it goes. It's like the spots with the most unique things going on, usually you'd never guess it by looking at it from the outside.
Yeah, really. It just looks like your typical American home. And that's what I find. A lot of the houses that are haunted don't look like they'd be that typical, stereotypical home that you see at the Addams Family or the Munsters home. They look like just a normal home.
Yeah, that's crazy how that goes.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to reading this book. I'm going to be checking that out on this week as I have some downtime. Which reminds me, tonight's show, I'm hoping to get it done either this evening or tomorrow evening before my webinar with Jim. But if not, I'll be working on to get the podcast up before Wednesday, because Wednesday I'm going to be off the grid for a couple of days recovering from surgery.
Oh, man.
It's good surgery, though. It's good surgery. I'm having LASIK surgery going to be taking place on Wednesday, so we can finally pitch out these glasses and hopefully have some 20/20 or 20/10 eyesight.
Nice. Throw them in the bonfire and have a party, man.
That's it. I've been wearing glasses since I've been 12 years old, and I finally made that decision to throw the glasses out, try the LASIK surgery, see how it goes. I've had a lot of people emailing me and asking me to let them know how it goes. So if the show's canceled next Sunday night and there is no announcement that if there's no announcement that, you know, there's no show or no announcement on the co-host or anything like that, just hang tight. I'll just feel my way around the keyboard and do what I can until my site returns. So
Got you there.
But, yeah, I'm looking forward to the LASIK surgery. I've heard some great things about it. It'll be nice to actually have some decent eye shine or eyesight, not eye shine, eyesight. thinking Bigfoot tonight, but, I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully I'll be good to go for next Sunday night, and we kick off a brand new co-host, brand new month, and all kinds of new great things coming to BTE Radio.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
All right, I've rambled on for enough time, I think. Let's give away something cool on the show tonight. What do you say, Fred?
Sounds good, man. Sounds very good.
Okay, well, we're going to go to break here in just a few minutes. But I've got some cool prizes to give away. I'm just going to give away one tonight. As we do every show that we give something away, we'll take the third caller. Toll free at 877-677-2858. We go to break 877-677-2858. I'll give you your choice. We have a Sauce B T-shirt, size extra large, and that stands for Southeastern Ohio Society for Bigfoot Investigations. A Sauce B T-shirt. The other one is a tie-dye T-shirt. If you're a fan of the tie-dye, you know, getting into the Grateful Dead and that kind of stuff. This is an extra large shirt as well, and it has a Bigfoot on the front playing guitar, and it says Bigfoot Rocks Salt Fork 2010, brand new with the tag still on it, never worn. So your choice, extra large size, of course. One of those shirts will give away here on the show when we go to break. So what do you say we jump into break a little early, give away a cool shirt, and then we come back and talk some Bigfoot?
That works, Eric.
We're going to jump into break, everybody. Thanks for listening tonight, and thanks for putting up with my rambling. This is BTE Radio. We're live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and, of course, TuneIn.com. When we come back, we've got Monica Rollins, Kathy Strain, and Melissa Hovey-Larson. The ladies of Bigfoot join us right after this.
Where else would you spend your Sunday nights? Beyond the Edge Radio. We'll be right back.
Good evening. Welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, and we are live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com, 8:35 here on the East Coast. And tonight is ladies' night here at BTE Radio. We've got a party going on already, and it's going to be a blast because I've got some of the more recognized, colorful, and personable female Bigfoot researchers joining us tonight. I have a lot of respect for these ladies. I've known them for a long, long time. In some cases, too long. Just kidding. But they are dear friends of mine. They are all joining us tonight to talk about their research in the Bigfoot field. And let me introduce them to you. First, from the West Coast, joining us, she is an anthropologist. She works for the Forestry Department. She's written a wonderful book about Bigfoot and the Native Americans. You can find her complete bio if you go to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. Let's welcome to the program Kathy Strain. Hi, Kathy. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great.
Well, I'm so glad that you could join us here on the show tonight. Nice little round of applause there. We appreciate that. And our next guest joining us on the show, she is in Texas. She is one of the co-founders of the Texas Bigfoot Research Center. And I've known this lovely lady for many years, and she'll even admit it's been too long. Something I'm sure she'd probably want to forget about. Her complete bio is listed on the website as well. Let's welcome Monica Rollins. Monica, good evening, dear. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
Doing great.
Thank you. Thank you.
And a little side note for those that don't know, Monica was a co-host here at BT Radio a few years back. So welcome back.
I sure was. It was a good time. I had a good time on that show.
This next lady has complained to me that she hasn't been on the show yet, and I thought, well, we got to get her on the show. So she's here. She's a dear friend of mine. She is the president of the American Bigfoot Society, the Ohio Bigfoot Hunters. As I said, a dear friend of mine. I've known Melissa a long time. Let's welcome Melissa Hovey Larson to the program. Hello, Melissa.
Hey, Eric. How's it doing?
I'm doing good. And last but not least, our fourth mystery guest, who I was keeping this quiet because I wasn't sure if she was going to join us. She is here.
Grandma.
She's going to be a grandma soon, so we got to tell her congratulations on that. She is one of my favorite Bigfoot researchers here on the East Coast. She writes a great blog. She is the Bigfoot Field Reporter. Let's welcome my dear friend Sharon Lee. Sharon Lee, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good.
Yay, Sharon.
Glad to be here with all these crazy ladies.
Yeah, it's a party. That's for sure. That's for sure. Let's start off with Kathy. Kathy, give us a little background of why you're doing Bigfoot research. What got you into it, and some of the things that you've done over the years, some of the research you've looked into, and tell us a little bit about the great book that you've written.
Oh, okay. Well, I got into Bigfooting when I was really young because I saw Legend of Bundy Creek had a heavy influence on me, and that's why I went into being an anthropologist was because of that would be the discipline that would study Bigfoot. I always gathered Native American stories, but I didn't get into Bigfoot, until I joined the BFRO in 1998 or 9 now. I can't really remember. And I remember being shocked to find out that there were other people who believed in Bigfoot on this thing called the Internet because, you know, it wasn't really prevalent back then. And my book is about, it's a collection of Native American stories, their traditional beliefs, because they've always known that Bigfoot is real. They really can't comprehend how come we're still toying with the idea. And it's just a collection of stories and some beautiful photographs from the cultures that they came from. And, to enjoy what it is that they had to say and what we can learn from them. Like, you know, from traditional stories, we know that Bigfoot whistles. We know that he knocks on wood. He does howls, you know, that kind of thing. So they've always known that information. And as far as research, we research here in California, but it's been kind of hard. The last couple of years, we had the big Rim Fire in 2013, which destroyed 257,000 acres here on my national forest where we did all our Bigfooting. And so we haven't Bigfooted locally in a few years just because the habitat's completely destroyed and I've been looking like, you know, a dog trying to get everything back together. But we have been to the Area X area of the NAWAC and have had some good experiences there, including a sighting. So.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that a little bit later on. You definitely had a sighting of I believe, two creatures?
That's correct. In the daylight, very, very close to me. No doubt whatsoever what it was. I mean, there's nothing else they could have been but a Bigfoot. So, yeah, they were trying to sneak up on us, but me and my big mouth, I yelled, "There they are," and I ran at them. And we probably could have gotten them on camera, but I blocked the camera.
Oh, okay. We'll talk more about that in a little bit, and we'll hear about that more in detail because that's a pretty interesting encounter that you had. Let's jump over to Melissa. Melissa, what got you started in Bigfoot research and then getting involved with the American Bigfoot Society and the Ohio Bigfoot Hunters?
Oh, boy. I can't really say started. I was interested, like Kathy and most people. I became interested when I was very young.
I found a book in a book fair, and I bought it, and it was about Bigfoot, and it had pictures of John Green in it, and I thought that was really cool. You know, I thought, well, I thought it was interesting that there could be something other that other people thought was making big footprints, because in the book there was a picture of John Green holding up this enormous footprint that had been casted. And so, I mean, just throughout my life, I just read more and more, and I seen them, you know, of course, like most people, the Patterson-Gimlin film when I was about 16 for the first time, and made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. And then in 2005, I moved to Texas, and then became involved with the TBRC, where I became friends with Monica, and started going and getting out into the field and doing field research, which I'll have to say, first of all, I did not even want to go there. When I first got involved with the TBRC, I just wanted to strictly do witness interviews because that's what my background is, educational, and in my career. So, but some great guys with the TBRC, you know, told me that, no, if you're going to be involved, then you're going to have to get out there, and so I did. And I've been involved ever since, and I moved to Ohio and reformed the American Bigfoot Society, and that was in 2008, and then Wayne and I became involved with Tim Stover and Ed Weiland of the Ohio Bigfoot Hunters, and so we get into the field and do stuff with them, and that's pretty much what's led me to where I'm at today.
Very good. Sharon Lee?
Yeah. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Okay. I muted myself because I'm sitting here coughing and everything. I have a cold. It's so cold out here. I'm sick of this winter already.
I hear you.
But anyway, yeah, so like Kathy, like Melissa, when I was little and I saw The Legend of Boggy Creek, I was just like fascinated, and I just would have nightmares about that thing all the time. And probably about 2007, I was looking around on the internet. Melissa, are you eating Cheetos?
That's not me. I think somebody's phone went a little crazy.
It sounds like a blender. Who's making margaritas?
That's me. It's a party show.
Not me. Oh, my gosh. It's paranormal activity. Oh.
There we go. Weird. Okay. Sorry, I ran out of ice.
Anyway. So, anyway, so I Googled and I saw the, I found the BFRO net, what do you call that, website, and started reading all of the reports, and I was just, like, wrapped up in it, and I was just crazy about it. And I found out that there was sightings like 15 minutes from my house where I live now in Madison. And I was just like, I just like dove in head first. I started going out, got myself a little camera, started taking pictures. And then I started, you know, traveling around to meet other researchers all across the United States. I've been out with you. I've been out with other people on the West Coast. And it's just been a great ride. I love it. It's just fascinating. I'm still on the fence about it. I've never seen one. But I have had several experiences, and I found footprints and everything. So, and that just is enough to keep me going, because I'm not a 100% believer until I actually see one with my own two eyes. But I just know that there's something out there. There has to be.
I'm on the same boat you are. I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Monica?
Yeah. Just like everybody else, been interested since I was a kid. I grew up in the northern-ish part of California, so those stories are everywhere. I was fortunate enough to have a grandfather who really encouraged interest in unusual things. He loved mysteries. He loved legends. And he really encouraged my brother and I to read as much as we could. And he'd tell us stories. And so I grew up with all of that in my head. And we vacationed in remote parts of Oregon every summer. And there were some things that happened there that at the time I just kind of thought were weird, but now that I'm in the research, I think that it's possible that it could have been Bigfoot or something causing those incidents to happen. And I moved out to Texas, and pretty much, you know, really didn't even think about it for a while. And one night I was living in East Texas, and I was watching The Legend of Boggy Creek for the 5 millionth time, and I started thinking, well, you know, that's not far from where I live. So I got on the internet and I Googled Texas and Bigfoot, and I was amazed at all the information that came at me. And the top three sites that came up at the time were the TBRC, the BFRO, and the GCBRO. And I contacted all three because I didn't know any better. I don't know, just throw it out there because I wanted to get into it and I thought it was pretty cool. And TBRC was the first to contact me and struck up a relationship with Craig, good friendship that we're still going on. And we got together for a meeting and I got involved with the organization and getting out there doing research. And I've co-organized an all-female expedition for the BFRO here in Texas a few years ago. And I've got a private expedition going on in Southern Washington later this year that I'm super excited about.
Very cool. Thank you, ladies, for that lovely introduction there. Let's start off right off the bat, because this was brought up while we were off the air. A lot of people don't know this, but if they do a little bit of research and watch a very popular show, I guess it was about 2007, you ladies were featured on an episode of Monster Quest conducting Bigfoot research out there in Washington State. How did that event come about, and what happened out there? Anything exciting?
We got rained on.
Yeah.
And we found elk tracks everywhere, and I think we took a picture in the back of a truck.
That's some good Bigfoot.
It was fun. It was exciting. It came around through Rick Knoll, who's a friend of ours, and I think he contacted, out of this group, he contacted Kathy first. Kathy reached out to Melissa and I to see if we were interested in it. And we ended up flying out there, and we were in the field for a week, wasn't it? It was a week.
Eight days.
Yeah, Melissa counted.
8 days.
8 days of cold rain.
Well, I was just saying that stupid meadow we had to hike through that tried to kill us, and I went out long and walked through it. Ugh.
Well, it sounds like it was a fun time.
It was, you know, it makes for good stories.
It does. Yeah.
While you were there, was there any Bigfoot activity that went on at the camp, or did you ladies find anything, any possible tracks?
Well, we found what we thought was a possible bedding area. I remember that. And we can't, here's the thing, is where it is, it's pretty remote, and there's a lot of stuff that grows there called bear grass. And it's very collectible for flower arrangements. Right, Melissa? It's popular
right.
for that?
Yeah.
So you can harvest it, and you can harvest it illegally. And there's a lot of people out there illegally harvesting bear grass. And what we think maybe the bedding area was perhaps some bear grass hunters, just, you know, making a nice little place to take a siesta for a few hours and marking their spot with the broken branches. But again, I mean, it could have been Bigfoot, could have been bear grass hunters. You just got to go with what's more plausible, in my opinion, which would have been the bear grass hunters. Because I am skeptical.
Yeah. Well, and there was two different times that we casted tracks. There was one, the first time actually made the television show when Monica and I were on the side of the mountain casting. And then the last time was down the trail between Hillside or Hilltop Camp and the gravel pit, where the camera crew had their
base camp.
And we were up at Hilltop. But I think, wasn't the ones on the trail, that was, like, I think 2 days before we left. Yeah, I think they were both bear. But I think that was, like, 2 days before we left.
Yeah, because the cast hadn't dried by the time we took off. Rick Knoll still has it. I don't even know what came of it.
Yeah, he's supposed to be sending them to me, actually.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Sharon, I know you haven't appeared on Monster Quest, but were you at the meadow where the girls camped at? Did you get to spend any time out there?
No, I have not.
Okay. Okay.
Sorry, that was my story.
Oh, that's okay. Are you planning on heading out there for any visits? I know Monica mentioned she's doing an expedition out there. Will you be involved in that?
I'm going to try to get out there as long as I can get my vacation time.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Now, the Skookum Meadows out there is well known for Bigfoot activity. I believe the BFRO was able to pour what they claim is a body cast out in the Skookum Meadow area. And was there a particular reason that you picked that area because of the activity, or was it another reason that was selected for the show?
I think
it was
picked for the anniversary at least in Rick Knoll's mind. I think it was for the anniversary of the Skookum cast.
Mm-hmm. Because where we were camped was right up the road from where the Skookum cast was pulled out.
Okay. Okay. Kathy, have you done any research out there since the episode aired?
Oh, yeah. Monica and Melissa and I went back twice at least. Maybe possibly more, I can't really remember. But after that episode, we went back, and it was definitely, it's a very interesting area for sure. I mean, it just unfortunately has a ton of people that know about it and go to it, you know, and there's hunters all the time. But it seems like every time we've ever been, it's rained like crazy, and that's not a fun Bigfoot in.
No, it's not.
No.
Did the show help? Or did it hinder your research, do you think?
Personally,
either or. I mean, was personally wise, did it hinder what you guys do, or did it help your cause?
I don't know that it helped or hindered it, to be honest with you. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, just like finding Bigfoot is just entertainment. I mean, I don't think that they're necessarily going anywhere that's going to be a hot spot for them in their personal investigation.
Right.
You know, it was a good time. It was great. It was an experience. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I bitched the entire time because everything was wet. I'm not kidding you when I tell you it rained the entire time we were there. But, you know, it makes for good memories and it's fun. But, yeah, as far as our research, or at least mine personally, I can't say that it really helped or hindered it. And as far as researching at the Skookum Meadows area, it obviously brought even more of a spotlight to that area where now, you know, weekend warriors, you know, researchers want to go out there and look. And, you know, I think if you get too many researchers or people in general in an area, it's not necessarily good for the habitat of any creature. You're going to start driving them away.
It kind of like
Salt
Fork is now.
In that respect, it probably hindered anybody else wanting to get out there for serious research for a while because, you know, it was popular. Number one for the Skookum cast is still pretty well known and talked about a lot. And then, of course, it's on national TV. Everybody in that area is going, shit, I don't know where that is. Let's go. So you've got that going on, too.
Yeah, I've noticed that from watching some of these shows. If an area is spotlighted, we'll use Salt Fork State Park, for example. It's been on Monster Quest in a couple episodes of Finding Bigfoot. And now it's become a draw for everybody, the curiosity seekers, the amateur Bigfoot researchers, the serious Bigfoot researchers, everybody goes to Salt Fork now, and it's almost overrun. Sharon, I know you've done a lot of research in Salt Fork State Park over the years. Are you finding more and more intrusion from outsiders coming to the area?
Well, it depends on the time of the year. Usually in the summer, you know, when we go a lot, there's a lot of people, quote-unquote, researchers that are out there, and you really have to, you know who's out in what area and what they're doing, because, you know, people are doing whoops and wood knocks and everything, so you have to really know who's in what location. And, you know, the best time is to go when, like, there's nobody there. And it has, I believe that in the last year, it has died down a lot at Salt Fork, because, like, well, I would say, like, 2 years ago, it was just crazy overrun with people. And now it's like there's, you know, as we venture out farther and farther into different areas, you know, we're finding different evidence and less, you know, people going around. And there's also other areas around Salt Fork that are not necessarily right on the property. There's Woodbury. There's also a personal property up 2 miles down the road from Salt Fork on the other side that they've had activity at their house, and we've gone there and spent the weekends there. And it's still pretty interesting.
A question to rewind back to Monster Quest. I've heard some stories of producers of those types of shows really had a lot of disrespect for the subject matter and maybe even tried to, like, orchestrate some stuff for the sake of the show. How did the producers treat you, and how did they respect the subject matter?
Kathy?
Well, I've
always found the people that we've worked with to be respectful. I mean, maybe not every single person on the crew, like the cameraman or something, but they're doing the show because usually they have an interest and they've pitched the idea to a network or to a production company. So they have educated themselves, done some work. I did a show last year with Scott. I'm going to kill his last name, so I'm not even going to say it. But from America Unearthed, and he was extremely nice, extremely personable, very respectful. I personally have never worked with somebody where I said, well, I'm never going to work with them again because they made me look stupid or they treated me disrespectfully. Nice. I've never had that experience. So.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
I did see that episode, Kathy. You did a wonderful job on that show.
Oh, thank you.
I really enjoyed it. And I thought he took the subject very seriously. I didn't notice any kind of sarcasm or any kind of tone to the episode that would make you think that they were taking it tongue-in-cheek. So I thought they did a very good job, and you did a very good job as well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I actually really enjoyed him. I mean, a lot of people don't know the behind-the-scenes of these, when you do these shows, that they literally take all day. Even if you're just, you know, a 15-minute or 10-minute section, you're there all day. It's very time-consuming, and when we were doing Skookum, we were there for 8 days, and I can't say that cameraman was particularly in our face. He went to bed at midnight. He didn't stay up past that, and he didn't talk a whole lot. You know, he wasn't, but Rick was the producer. Rick Knoll was the producer for that episode, so of course he had a deep interest in the subject. And you know, and my husband has done something with Finding Bigfoot, and I think Monica has some experience with that as well. And they're very professional. They in, out, boom, bang. Very kind, very personable, make sure all your needs are taken care of. And so, you know, I think in general, people who do that have an interest. They may not be believers. They're probably skeptics, but they don't think we're kooky.
I hear that. And a question for all of you. It was a rival podcast. They were talking about more aggressive Bigfoot encounters where maybe the Bigfoots got a little bit violent. One thing in particular, somebody's motorhome got messed with. Have any of you had an encounter that was more on the aggressive side, or has it been more at a distance? Or?
Well, I've had an incident up in Area X that Kathy spoke of earlier. A few years ago, and I can't say that, you know, speak to what it was particularly, but I was with another researcher, Brian, and we were walking down a path, and we were talking. We were using white lights. We weren't trying to be quiet. We were just, you know, somebody had reported something, so we're just going to check it out. We're just talking while we were walking, and on the way back, we were at the bottom of the slope of a mountain. And something was walking about halfway up the mountain. We could hear it, and we talked about it, and we shined our lights up towards it. And it was in the summer, so the foliage was pretty thick. And as we shined our lights up there, whatever it was, stopped and just made a beeline down the mountain towards us. I mean, you could see the shrubbery moving. I mean, this thing was hauling towards us.
Wow.
So we were trying to back up to get some space between us because there was a line of foliage, and then it breaks into a meadow. And I had a gun on me, and I'm not going to shoot blind. I had to wait for it to, you know, whatever it was, to come out.
Exactly.
You know, if I'm going to have to shoot something.
Exactly.
And it got right up to the brush line and stopped. I mean, just stopped. It wasn't a full run, and then it just stopped right on the inside of the brush. And it walked to one side. It paced back and forth for a few minutes. And then it went back the way it came, slowly up the hill.
Wow.
So that was, you know, whatever it was, I consider that aggressive.
Yeah, that's very aggressive.
You know, a bluff charge, I guess. Yeah.
Monica, when that thing was running towards you, did you feel like the ground pounding and shaking?
I felt my heart pounding and shaking. recall the ground itself, but that particular area is quite rocky. So I don't know that I would have felt any impact tremors anyway. And it was on a slope. So.
Okay. Because I remember when I was in Hanobi and I was hiking back, and it was 100 degrees out, and it was in the middle of the afternoon. And I was hiking back to the camp by myself because I left the other two ladies down where they were because they were exhausted. We ran out of water and everything. And I came across something
and it was on the right side of me, and all of a sudden I just heard like this thundering footstep, and it was May 29th, and I could, you know, it was like in Hinobi, Oklahoma, the foliage was really dense, and I could see this thing through, just through the leaves. I couldn't see anything but just this blonde fur, blonde hair, like mine. It was like going boom, 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 and I felt the ground just pounding. And to me, I was just like, I don't know what that was, but it was like, I said, I got to keep going back to the camp. I was going back to get the ATV to get the other girls because they were dehydrated and couldn't hike back. And I swear that, and we'd also heard a whoop that day and everything, but I've never had anything aggressive. I mean, if anything, it was running away from me.
Okay.
And, you know, everything that I've had was always like pacing the camp, you know, other situations, pacing, nothing ever aggressive, like, you know. But I felt threatened.
I hear you. I hear you. And when you're all in the field, do you all carry firearms for protection or bear spray? Or what are your philosophies on that?
I carry a gun.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. And I've also had pretty... I've been growled at. I've had rocks thrown at me. I've had, you know, something obviously very, obviously I've seen them, but I've also had something in the dark very close where I could smell it. But the most aggressive thing was being growled at and having a rock literally thrown at my head. And if I hadn't moved, it would have hit me in the head.
Wow. So
probably wouldn't have done any damage, but.
It'd definitely make a statement, though.
I consider that just dumb luck, you know, because if I throw with my left hand, I can hit anything, even though I'm right-handed, because it just flings.
Yeah.
I think it was just flung.
Yeah. And I haven't, myself, I haven't been able to get into the field, but, like, on the growls and things like that, when you experience that firsthand, is I've heard people say it's like, you feel it in your chest. It feels like a concert. Are the growls always that intense, or does it just depend kind of?
It's very low, very guttural, very, I'm going to kill you if you don't get away from me. You know, this isn't a playful thing. This is get away from me now.
Gotcha.
And so I took it very seriously, yeah.
Gotcha.
What about you, Melissa? Any aggressive Bigfoots out there?
Well, about the only time I can say that I had anything that probably made me really nervous was actually here in Salt Fork State Park. One night after we had broke down camp, or we had all gotten into our tents and stuff for the night, and my husband, he always keeps a H2 running. And all night long, so he can record every noise that there is in the forest. And well, we were just getting into our tent, and I was getting settled into sleep, and we could hear something walk, and it sounded really heavy across the road because we were just in a campsite. We didn't really think anything was going to happen at a campsite with all these tents around, because this was after Creature Weekend, and a group of us stayed. And this thing walked across, and we heard it, and it was heavy footfalls. And it walked right into camp, probably no more than 6 feet from our tent.
Wow.
And we heard it take this really deep, chesty breath.
Wow.
And then we actually recorded some really strange mouth, tongue type popping off the roof of its mouth. And I've sent it off to some people who are, you know, they're experts in bear noises and sounds and stuff like that. And they said, that's not a bear. We have no idea what it was, still to this day. But whatever it was, it came into camp. And then where we finally decided to get out of the tent and investigate was when we heard it walk around our car and check all four door handles to see if the door was open.
Whoa.
Because we could hear it pull on the door handles, and the door handles would pop back. And we looked at the car all over to see if there was, because if it had been a black bear, there would have been claw marks on the car. There was nothing. There was absolutely nothing. And by the time we got out of the tent to go investigate, whatever it was, just was boom, gone, took off. So
Melissa.
It was really close.
Was it? Was the sound that you heard, was it like that?
Yeah.
It's not the first time
I've heard that at Salt Fork, and we had it on recording, and I didn't tell anybody, and then that was in September, and in November, I went to Salt Fork with Don, and we were talking, and he said that he had a recording that him and his cousins went out hiking, and they came back, and the only thing that they got on their recording, you could hear them coming back to where they left the recorder in the tree, and they heard that. And when he told me that, oh, my God, because I had never told anybody about what we had, and I was just like, oh, my God, we got the same exact sound right at Salt Fork.
Well, and a friend of mine from out in the Pacific Northwest sent me a copy of an audio file that he recorded out there in Washington State, and it's almost identical to what we recorded here at Salt Fork. So then that, even makes me a little bit more curious about what it is, but who knows? I mean, we didn't see what did it. We could hear what it was in the area, but it sounded heavy and it sounded big. But
wow.
Who knows,
Yeah, I remember Wayne sent me a copy of that to listen to, and it's almost similar to what Don captured on his audio recorder over there in Salt Fork. And I've heard that, too, as well. It's very peculiar what it is.
We heard it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just like, what the heck is that?
Hmm.
And Wayne and I went back and forth. We were like, could raccoons do that? We were like, I don't know. I've never heard anything like that before in the woods.
That's interesting.
So that was new for me.
Yeah. We're going to open up the phone lines if anybody wants to call in. I've seen a couple people have called in, but I didn't want to be rude and interrupt you ladies during your sharing your experiences. So we will open up the phone lines now for calls at toll-free 877-677-2858. Again, 877-677-2858. Please feel free to call in and join the conversation if you have a question for Kathy, Monica, Melissa, or Sharon, our guest tonight. We're talking with the ladies of Bigfoot here at BTE Radio. Sharon, you and I had a kind of a, I guess you call it an aggressive encounter when we were in Clearfield County. I guess it was about 2009. Do you remember that?
When I came, I got there late. It was dark,
mm-hmm.
and you guys were already up the trail. And then you came down to meet me, and we get up there, and Dwayne's wearing a hard hat. And I'm like, what the heck? And he's like, well, we had rocks thrown at us last weekend, and I don't want to get hit in the head with this rock. So I just laughed at him, and I said, I want to get hit by a rock. And wouldn't you know it, it was, I don't even know about it, maybe half hour later, rocks started coming out of the woods. Just like, and every time we would like, we were like in a certain area, but every time we would move, the rocks would come again, like, but they weren't hitting us. They were missing us. But every time we would move, they would start throwing the rocks again. So it was like they were trying to keep us in one area. I do remember that, of course.
It's funny because I'll never forget, as long as I live, you said, I'd really like to have a rock thrown at me. And half an hour later, you bent down in your pack and one goes flying over the top of your head. I'll never forget that. It was amusing. We do have a phone call for you ladies calling in from the 478 area code. What's your name and where are you calling from tonight?
Charlie Robson, back in Georgia.
Well, thanks for calling in tonight. And you have something for our ladies tonight?
I was just wanting to, talk to you about a sighting that I had. And here in Georgia, my husband and I started researching it, a lot of the areas. And he's had a sighting here in Georgia.
Well, feel free to go ahead. We'd all love to hear your sighting.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. When I was living in Texas, we moved to a small town outside of Corsicana, Texas. And when we first moved in, we went to the local feed store and had to get some feed for our cows. And one of the guys there said, well, have you seen that big man down there yet? And kind of, scared my dad because he didn't know what was going on. And he questioned, so what big man are you talking about? He said, well, there's a big man that comes up looking in people's windows at night. So it wouldn't really go into a whole lot of detail, but we moved in and lived there 3 years before we had any evidence of a Bigfoot being out there on the property. The first occurrence was my sister was there visiting with her husband, and we were eating outside at the picnic table one night, and I'd just gone in the house. I was only 6 years old. And she went out to the front of the property to scrape the, you know, the extra food out of her plate, and it screamed on the creek that ran in front of our house. We had a creek that ran in front of it and then down beside the property, and it screamed. And it scared her so bad that she ran into the house and she couldn't breathe. She was 8 months pregnant, and it took a while to calm her down. But they didn't even hear or see anything until I was 10 years old. And we only lived on 20 acres, but it was a very remote area. And I always went outside when I was a little kid. I mean, nothing kept me from going outside. And one day, it was just my mother and I were there, and I went running to the back of the property. I was going to go down to where the pond was at, and you know, I did this every day. I just went down there and sat down by the water and didn't have any problems with anything. And one day I was walking down there, and I noticed my dog wouldn't go with me. And I thought, well, that's strange. Well, I'm going anyway. So I got almost to the pond and stopped to look at something up in a tree. And anyway, it was just a small, like, bee nest. It just caught my attention. And I turned to walk towards the pond and saw something as I turned out of the corner of my eye, and this creature was standing there, leaned up with his back against the tree. I don't know how long we've been watching. Like I said, the dog refused to go with me that day. But when I turned and stood there staring at it, I stopped, and I of course I wanted to run, but then my curiosity, I guess, got the best of me. I just stood there staring at it. And it, you know, I've told people before, this is a closer sighting than Patterson Gimlin had, and it was very close range, about 11:30, 10:30 during the day. When it stared at me and I was staring back at it, it never moved. And I kept looking at it just up and down, trying to, you know, look at it, see where it was, and try to figure it out, and just try to remember all I could about it. But its hair was the same color as an orangutan. And it had the pointed head. The shoulders were just so huge. All I could tell my parents is that it looked like a linebacker, you know, a football player with the big pads. And you could actually see the muscle definition under the hair, where its shoulders, the shoulder muscles were just so massive and huge. And I stood there staring at it, and it was staring at me. It never showed its teeth or anything like that, but it looked over to the left, and that's where the creek was at. All it moved was its eyes, and when that happened, it kind of got up off the tree and took a step towards me, and I thought, you know, it was coming after me. So I took off and started running. And I turned while I was running to see how close it was behind me, and I could see it disappearing into the trees on the creek. Well, I stopped and, you know, watched it walk into the tree and took off running again, because then I was trying to get somebody else's attention, you know, somebody to come down there with me and see it. So I went home and told my mother what happened, but, you know, ran in the house, slammed the door, locked the door. You know, I grabbed some binoculars. I was looking outside. I couldn't see anything. My mother said, just stay in the house till your daddy gets home and your brother. Well, when my brother got there, and my dad told him, go in there and see if you can see what she's talking about. Well, before we left, I told him, I said, are you bringing a gun? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, I'm not going if you're not. You know, and then on the way down there, I was scared to death to go back. And I told him, is it loaded? And he said, well, it is now. And when we got down there, I showed him where I was standing and where the creature, as I call it, was standing. And of course, we measured it. He said, how tall was it? And I showed him on the tree, and it was a 6 or 8 foot tall creature. And he didn't see anything, and neither did I. We came back home, and being the little kid that I was, I wanted to take a picture of it. I said, you know, I told my parents, I can prove this. You know, just get me a camera with a telescopic lens so I can take a good picture of this.
Do you have a question for the guest tonight?
Well, no, I just want to know what they think about it being more primate than anything else. That's what I feel like it is. It's more of a primate.
All right, well, we'll throw that out to the ladies. What are your thoughts on that, ladies?
I think she's right.
I would agree.
Yeah, it's definitely a primate. It's not human in any way.
Well, that's what I'm looking at when I go into the woods now. I'm thinking of it more as a primate and trying to think of it, you know, the ways that a primate would react to certain things. And as I was saying, my husband had a sighting here in Georgia, and the one that he saw looked different from the one I saw. He said it had canines.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have time to go over his sighting because we have a lot of other callers coming in and a ton of questions.
Okay.
But thank you for calling in and sharing that. I'm sure we'll give out the information for the ladies for their websites and their contact information if you want to try to reach them off the air. But we are getting a ton of other callers in, and we got to make way for them. So thank you for calling in tonight.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good evening. All right. Sorry about that, folks. We've got a lot of questions here, and sorry to our caller. We've got to keep moving along here. The chat room's overflowing. The calls are coming in. You ladies are pretty popular tonight. Folks want to know what your thoughts on a lot of the different topics in Bigfoot research. So we'll get a Digger Dog who has a question. He would like to know, what are your views on the kill, no kill?
Okay, I'll be hated. I will say that I don't believe anything short of a body is going to shut up every critic out there. You can take a photo, you can take the best video you want, and there is always going to be somebody coming back and saying, that was me in a costume. No, that was somebody in a costume. This is the inconsistency. Look at here, you can see where this was done. You have to have solid proof in the form of a physical being, in my opinion, to shut everybody up and to prove it once and for all. That's my opinion. Do I want to be the one pulling the trigger? Not necessarily, but I believe that that's what will be required.
Any other ladies have any thoughts on that?
Everybody can throw their rotten tomatoes and cabbage at me later.
You know,
well, they can throw it at me, too, because I'm also pro-kill. So, and I don't like the term pro-kill. It's the term pro-species, pro-science, because we're all about the animal. Nobody who loves Bigfoot or does Bigfoot, he wants the animal to go away. And the only way to conserve the species is to prove the science that they exist, and that will require a body. And so it doesn't have to be more than one. And if I had to be the shooter, I would, but I would prefer somebody who has a better aim than I am.
Well, you know, my journey in this one has been difficult. Because, as you know, the ladies on the panel will tell you, I mean, I've been very pro no kill, you know, since I got involved in this community. But I got to tell you, as time goes on, I can truly see that it's going to take one body, at least. Now, I disagree with Kathy in the respect that, you know, it's going to take at least one specimen for scientists to get interested, but then I think after that it's going to require more. Because each gender has different things that would be of interest to science. And then, you know, through their lifespan, so you might have to take one that's younger, like a juvenile, or even one that's even smaller. So, I mean, that's the part that scares me. Am I willing to pull the trigger myself? No. Would I pull the trigger to protect myself or someone I cared about or part of my team? In a heartbeat.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, in a heartbeat.
That's different.
But I'm coming to this point now in my journey through this community and through the investigation where, I mean, I can honestly see the only thing that's, like what Monica said, the only thing that's going to shut people up is a body. So that's my stance at this point.
Sharon, what do you think?
The ladies, definitely I don't even carry a gun. I don't even know how to shoot a gun. I've tried, as Jay and Jen. But I believe that it will take a body, but for my own personal experience, if I saw one myself, then I would be a true believer, and that would be enough for me. I don't think I would have to prove it to the world or, prove it to anybody else.
Fair enough. All right, we are going to continue to take calls at toll-free 877-677-2858. And just a couple of things when you call in. If you have a sighting that you want to share, please keep it short and to the point. If you have a question for the ladies, that's great. Make sure your radio is turned down or your computer is turned off so we don't get feedback. And when you do call in and you hear yourself going live, make sure you mute your phone out if you can, or not talk if there is somebody talking at that time. That way we don't have a lot of confusion going on. So we'll open up the phone lines. We got a break coming up here in about 6 minutes. So if you do want to get a call in, now's the time to do it. Our guests tonight, Kathy Strain, Monica Rollins, Melissa Hovey-Larson, and Sharon Lee. We're talking with the ladies of Bigfoot tonight here at BTE Radio as we wrap up Cryptid Month. I do have a question for you ladies. Maybe you can answer this, and it's been a hotly debated question for some time. The general perception of Bigfoot research is that it's a man sport, and only guys go out and research. Obviously, to the contrary, you've proven that statement or that debate wrong. Have you gotten that argument thrown at you, and what is the perception people give you when you tell them that you do Bigfoot research? We'll start off with Sharon.
Oh, okay. Well, no, I've never even had a problem with anyone saying that it's just a man's sport or a man's area of expertise. You know, even though there are more men in the field, the women, like the girls here on the panel, it's like they've done so much and they've been so successful with what they've done that they have, a lot of fans, a lot of people follow them. And, I've seen Kathy Strain, I've seen her like three different times, like in Oregon, Kenobi, doing her speech. And she always gives such a great presentation. And they're always different. It's not always the same old thing over and over. But anyway, so no, I haven't had any problems with people saying that it's a man's sport. And then now, back in 2006, 2007, I was, in the closet about it. I didn't talk about it at all. And at work, when I said, oh yeah, this is what I do, they would laugh at me. But then as the years went on, they're like, okay, what'd you do this weekend? What's going on? And every time there's a story, they're forwarding me the stories. So it's gotten more, popular, more accepted. I'm able to say, I drive around with my Jeep that says the Bigfoot Field Reporter.
So there's no hiding on it in your car, no.
Yeah, there's no hiding. And then, but that's great because I'll be filling up at the gas station and people will come up to me and start talking to me. And actually, I was at the pet food store in town and I was pulling out onto the road and they waved me down. So I had to turn around and go back into the parking lot. And they started telling me about this sighting that was just reported to them. And, I went off on that investigation. It's been a great trip. I love it. I love it.
We'll go to Melissa next.
Oh, jeez. I have actually had a gentleman tell me that I would probably be happier if I went shopping at the mall and buying new purses or shopping or cooking for my husband or, things like this rather than getting into the woods where it's, wet and damp and cold and icky. Well, for a woman like me, that's just encouragement to get out there and do it and do the best job I can. I mean, I have faced it, but I've got to be honest. I mean, I have had more encouragement from men in this community who thought that they had faith in my abilities out there. They knew I could handle it. They knew I could do it. But then I also had support by way of Monica and Kathy. So, I always felt like I had people in my corner who had my back. And that's really important when you're a woman who's breaking into something which is very male-dominated. So, you know, I've been called the feminist Bigfooter, and because, you know, I've spent a lot of time trying to get other women to get into the field of research. I've given up a lot of time in interviews like this, you know, trying to encourage other women to become involved. But I've got to say, I mean, I've had a lot of encouragement from the men who've been in the community for years and years. So there is a certain fraction of men who think that we should be doing something else. But I'm thankful that that number is getting lower.
Kathy, what do you think? You think there's a section of the population out there that think Bigfoot's just for men only?
Well, I certainly haven't met any, but then again, between Monica and I think we scare the hell out of most men, so I tell us that. But, I have never met anybody who has ever treated me like I was lesser. In fact, I think I've been treated like been deferred to. And it doesn't mean that, you know, I don't know how to put this. I can put up my own tent just fine, but I'm perfectly okay if somebody wants to offer to help put my tent up as well. And I will gladly help somebody else put up their tent. And so being a woman in Bigfooting doesn't mean you're hard as nails and you don't want anybody doing anything. It just means that we have a similar interest and we bring something different to the table, because we do have softer voices and we do have a different, way less aggressive mannerism that I think Bigfoot finds attractive. And so, and I think men who have gone out with us as women have seen things that they haven't experienced because they haven't had a woman present on the team before. So I've never ran into it at all, and I've never had an issue. I spent 3 weeks in Area X without Bob, which wasn't fun, you know, in that sense, but everybody treated me fine, carried my own weight. We did just fine. Monica was with me there for a week at that time. And so, yeah, I haven't seen it.
Well, good. That's good to know and encouraging. I've heard it a couple of times from a few different people, but I have to agree. I think you ladies do a fabulous job. A lot of the women that are involved in Bigfoot research, I think there are more women out there to do better than some of us guys out there do, actually. So I've heard it, and I end up getting in an argument with somebody about it, but I try not to let it get to me too much, because I think you know, everybody is just as welcome to get involved in it, and I encourage people to get out there and do it. We are at the bottom of the hour. It's 9:30 now. We've got to take a quick break and take care of some sponsors. But when we come back, we have more with the Ladies of Bigfoot. We've got Kathy Strain joining us tonight, Monica Rollins, Melissa Hovey-Larson, and Sharon Lee, the Bigfoot field reporter. My guest co-host tonight is Fred Kracke from Omaha, Nebraska. And that's, we are right, talking Bigfoot tonight here on the program as we wrap up Cryptid Month. Folks, keep right near your computer or your radio or whatever you're listening to us on tonight. We'll be back after the break. Don't go anywhere.
All right, that's enough.
BTE Radio. We'll be right back after these messages. You can stop holding it now.
Welcome back to BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. I am your host for the events tonight, Eric Altman, producer of tonight's program, and our guest co-host, who is our last contestant in the search for a new co-host here at BTE Radio, Fred Kracke, joins us. How you doing, Fred?
I'm good, Eric. How's it going?
Going real good. Got four lovely ladies joining us tonight, and we're having a party, so it can't get any better than this.
That's right. Been a great conversation with some interesting discussions.
Definitely. And as I talk to the ladies off air, I'm going to try to get each one of them back individually later in the year so we can have a more intimate conversation with them and pick their brain and really spend some more time with them, because 90 minutes doing a panel is just not long enough. It goes by too quick. So,
Very true. Very
yeah.
true.
Monica says she only needs 10 minutes, but, you know, we'll stretch 90 minutes out of her. we'll make it work. Make it work.
I can make up stuff if you want.
Hey, whatever it takes to keep you with us for 90 minutes, we'll talk about everything. That's right. Monica Rollins joins us tonight. Kathy Strain, Melissa Hovey Larson, and the Bigfoot Field reporter Sharon Lee. We're talking with the ladies of Bigfoot. And it's been a great conversation tonight, ladies. Thank you so much for spending your Sunday night with us. It's Oscar night, and I know you're giving up quite a lot. Or maybe not.
Yeah, the Oscars.
I saw Bradley Cooper. I was on the red carpet, so I was happy.
Oh, well, good. Hey, then your night's set. Awesome. Cool. We were talking about some interesting things before we went to break, your thoughts on Kill No Kill, and I know that Monica and Sharon, you've had experiences, and Melissa, I know you've had some experiences, but three ladies have really not had a sighting as far as I'm aware of, and I know Kathy has. She told us about very briefly about Area X. Kathy, would you mind sharing your sighting with us and what you experienced that day?
Sure. We had come in on a Sunday, and not much happened that Sunday. And the following day on Monday, we had quite a bit of activity of some rock throws. And I'll make it short since we don't have very much time. But essentially, we had a rock had been thrown over on a cabin, and people had gone over there to look at it. There was five of us there at the time. And when they came back, we kind of sat down in our chairs in front of another cabinet. So there's a rock ring there. And we start hearing some foot shuffling, like something was walking. And we were like, well, that sounds bipedal, and that sounds really close. And we're listening. And I had the best view. I was looking right down this place called the Bottleneck. And there, all of a sudden, they were. There was a big one and a little one. And it looked like the little one was on a mad dash towards us, and the big one was trying to steer it to go up the hill and away from us, and this is a pretty steep hill, and the little one was having none of it. The little one was fully intending on, I think, running behind to get it behind the shed to get a better look at it, and the second I saw it, I jumped up and said, there they are, and I ran at them, and we did have a camera set up, a motion detection camera, and all you get is my backside on the camera. But the second I said that, it alarmed them both, and they went up that hillside like nothing I've ever seen in my life. It was the fastest, smoothest thing I've ever seen. It was, if I had believed in ghosts, I would have said I just saw two ghosts. That's how fast they went up that hillside. And all sound, they were pretty noisy coming towards us, but the second they went up the hillside, it was just like silence. And the big one is the one I focused mostly on. This is 6 o'clock in the evening in May, so it was really bright. It was just huge. It was massive. It made Patty look like nothing. I mean, just massive torso, massive thighs, massive buttocks. And when it went up the hillside, it took its arms and it put it to its side, not swinging like Patty does, but just kind of tucked them in like a long-distance runner and just powered up that hill like it was just nothing. And it didn't, I'd say it would have gone up probably in 20 seconds, and it would take us, you know, somebody in pretty good shape, probably a good 2 to 3 minutes to cover the same distance. And so just hair covered, black, facial skin was the same color as his hair. No sclera around the eye at all that you could tell. And the little one probably was 4 foot tall, 5 foot tall, something like that, just considerably smaller. And I didn't really pay much attention to the second one. There was five of us, four of us saw it, including Bob Strain, Brian Brown, and Mark McClurkin. And they really saw the little one a lot better than I did. And they thought it had gone across a log and then up the hill, but I don't know those details. So it was, and they were no more than probably 50 meters from me at the most.
Wow.
At the absolute most.
That's really close.
Wow. Yeah, it was very, very close. And you know, you kind of have that hindsight of what if I hadn't said anything, what if I had let them come closer, but then nobody else would have maybe have seen them because it was my pointing to them and alerting everybody else that the other three got to see them.
That's fascinating. It's a great sighting to have. I'm envious. I'm envious. I wish I had a sighting like that. The questions are really flying by in the chat room, and I'm trying to keep up with them, folks. So if I don't get to your question, it's because it scrolled off the screen and I couldn't get to it in time. But somebody wanted to know, Kathy, what's your thoughts on Bigfoot being paranormal? I'll ask that of all the ladies. Do you have any opinion one way or the other?
I don't believe in the paranormal. There's nothing about them that indicates that they have any paranormal abilities. Like I said, I obviously carry a gun. Everybody in Area X obviously has a gun. And they could have mind-zapped us, done whatever they wanted to us, and we got nothing. We absolutely got nothing. So they're just an animal. They're a form of an ape. I don't know what form of an ape, but some form of an ape, and they're no different than any animal. They're just fast, strong, clever, curious. They're all those things, and eventually we'll figure it out. We just have to stop thinking like humans. We have to start thinking like animals, and that's why we haven't accomplished getting a body yet.
Ladies, any opinion?
I agree with Kathy. I mean, how much to add to that?
Right? Yeah, no, they're not paranormal.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't believe that they're paranormal either. I believe they're flesh and blood. But I've gone through, followed tracks in the snow that just end. And, like, there's no tree to jump to or whatever. So there are certain things I can't explain, and I don't understand it. But I really do think they're flesh and blood.
All right. Very good. Next question comes from Godzilla. Where's your favorite place to go Bigfooting?
Okay. I like in the South. I enjoy the Arkansas, Oklahoma area in the South. My favorite place that I have to fly to investigate would be pretty much the entire Pacific Northwest. That is an amazing place. And to be honest, if you go somewhere that's off the beaten track and you get far enough in there, you really can't find a bad spot to investigate, in my opinion.
I agree. I mean, the Pacific Northwest is just beautiful without any rival, but my favorite place is I do enjoy Oklahoma area just because it's new, it's elaborate, everything's trying to kill you, and, you know, it's kind of risky. No. Kind of enjoy it.
It's true.
There's a place that we frequent here in Ohio that I like quite a bit, and we'll be headed back down there again soon, but I mean, we've recorded some pretty interesting things there. I mean, for locally, but if, you know, like Monica, if I could get on a plane and go someplace, it would definitely be the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I like I've drive 2.5 hours to get to Salt Fork, but actually I could just, you know, drive 45 minutes around here or western Pennsylvania, and there's just so much. There's so much woods, and there's so many sightings, and I feel more comfortable, you know, closer to home, areas that I know, and, you know, following up on people's sightings,
mm-hmm.
Something close. Flying, when you fly, I mean, I, you get, you know, you're stuck doing other things and too much travel and all that. But I do like the area you've taken me to, Eric, out in Clearfield and Du Bois. Very squatchy out there. Love it.
Yeah, there's some good spots over here in Pennsylvania, as in Ohio, and the East Coast has a lot of good areas to Bigfoot research. But I love them all. I've been to all those places, and I love squatching in Pacific Northwest, Texas. I have not been to Arkansas or Oklahoma, and I've got to get down there, but I love anywhere I can get out in the woods.
Come on down, Eric. I'll take you.
Uh-oh. You'll leave me too, won't you?
I promise you'll come back.
Oh, okay. Well,
or if you don't, it won't be my fault.
Fair enough. Go ahead, Fred. You had a question?
A question for all you ladies. Through my reading, I mean, I see the prevalence in the Pacific Northwest, Pennsylvania, etc. But as far as the Midwest goes, the closest I've seen to, like, just using my location as an example, Nebraska, I've read about some stuff in Missouri, Through my readings, I haven't come across anything in Nebraska. Have you guys done any research throughout like deep Midwest, like Nebraska, Iowa type of areas, or is that sparse?
That's a question.
The Midwest is even devoid of a lot of Bigfoot, traditional Bigfoot stories or traditions, and a high correlation with Bigfoot activity includes rainfall and good habitat, and there just isn't, I don't think, enough trees and other stuff in those some of those areas to really sustain a population permanently. Now, does that mean they don't move through on occasion? I'm sure they probably do, but it's probably not a permanent population that could, you know, find suitable habitat and suitable food and water resources.
Gotcha.
Well, I've definitely heard of reports out of, like, Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, places like that, but I don't know if there are populations that are staying there. I've never done any research in those areas.
Oh, okay, but, so, like, more in transit type of stuff.
All right, well, we've got about 5 minutes left in the show, so we're going to kind of close things down and not take any more questions because, unfortunately, we're just about out of time. But before we call it a night, we want to throw out there how the public can get a hold of you ladies if they have questions, they want to report a sighting, they want to talk to you about your research. So we'll get your websites and contact information. But Sharon, I know you have an event coming up in June. Monica, I know you have one coming up in September. And I'd love to hear about those events and if you could share them with us.
Awesome. June 18th through 21st at Sulphur State Park, we put on an event called Bigfoot Adventure Weekends. And it's really amazing how many people just Google, like, Bigfoot Adventure, whatever. We get people. I have people coming from Canada this year, New York, Pennsylvania, all over. And we just have a great time. It's a four-day weekend. And all the food is provided. You've been there, Eric. We do lots of little workshops, casting footprints, trail cam setup, baiting, evidence collection, vocalization analysis, all kinds of things that we do. And the people just love it. And we have people who just keep coming back each year. And it's kind of hard because we try to limit it to like 25 people max because we like it to be comfortable. We take the people out in small groups. You know, we break up into groups. You know, because you don't want 20 people tromping around in one big group in the woods. That's not going to get you anywhere. And the people just love it. And on Friday night, we show a movie in the outdoor amphitheater, and it's just a great time. So that's June 18th through the 21st, and that's BigfootAdventureWeekend.com. And they could also report sightings and everything to TheBigfootFieldReporter.com.
Woo-hoo! Monica?
At the end of September, Craig and I are putting on the Texas Bigfoot Conference again. I believe we're going to be doing it again this year in Jefferson, Texas, which is where we would traditionally hold it. Although we do get wooed by other cities, Jefferson seems to be the main attraction. That's where everybody recognizes the Bigfoot conferences taking place. We're still in the planning stages, so I don't have any speakers to announce yet. It's still a little bit of time away, but the end of September is going to be the conference, and we do have a Facebook page for it. So if you go onto Facebook and research Texas Bigfoot Conference, you will see the date, and you will be able to sign up for the announcements as we make them, which we're super excited about, trying to get a good lineup this year.
Well, I've been to the Texas Bigfoot Conference in 2005, and the one I attended was a blast. I had a great time. Money's the only thing keeping me from coming back down again, but I'm hoping to make it back down one of these years to visit everybody, all my friends in Texas. You guys do a great job putting on a great event. And Sharon, I had a blast at the Bigfoot Adventure Weekends. Had a lot of fun doing the plaster casting little seminar that I did and hanging out with you guys in the woods. It's a good time. So make sure you check out those events, folks. You will not be disappointed. That's for sure. Melissa, Kathy, you guys have anything going on that you want to throw out there?
Well, the AIBR is trying to have a conference. We're not getting very organized, but we might, and it would probably be in September as well, but not conflict with Monica's event. I have been asked to speak at the Navajo Reservation as well sometime in September and possibly in Oklahoma in October, but I don't have any of that firmed up. But people can reach me at Kathy.Strain@BigfootResearch.com or the IBR website, which is BigfootResearch.com. And the only thing I think that I want to add is I recently became a grandmother, and I highly recommend it.
Awesome.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
And last but not least, Melissa, anything going on that you want to talk about?
Sure. Coming up this May is Creature Weekend here in the state of Ohio. It'll be down at Salt Fork State Park. You can go to creatureweekend.com and get all the ticketing information, and tickets are selling out fast. So the speakers are Ken Gearhart, Chad Arment, Nick Redfern, and Bill Brock was just added. So get your tickets, folks. It's going to be a great weekend.
Yeah, very nice. Go ahead, Monica.
I just said that's a good lineup.
Oh, yeah, it is.
I'm commending the lineup.
It is. It's a great lineup.
Oh, great and I want to add in a personal note like Kathy did. I just got married in October of last year, and I highly recommend it to everybody.
All righty then. Congratulations. And congratulations to Kathy on being a grandmother. That's fantastic news. And Sharon Lee, you're going to be a grandmother soon as well?
Yes, in June, and she better not dare go into labor during the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. I will not be there.
Oh, she better not. No, we have to
I've already
out.
Told her. Yes.
The Ohio Bigfoot Conference today, yes, Sharon and I will be there hanging out, having fun.
Oh, gosh, yeah, balls of fury.
Yeah, and I think, Monica, I'm going to be seeing you at Beachfoot in July.
Yes, you will, yes. You sure will. It'll be at the tail end of my little expedition out there at Skookum. I'm splitting that in half and spending one half of the week in Skookum and the other half at Beachfoot. So we'll get to hang out there, too.
Very cool. You ladies will be busy this year, that's for sure. That's for sure. Well, I want to thank you all for coming on tonight, and thank you, Sharon, for coming on last minute. I appreciate that. It was great talking with you, and again, later this year, hopefully you ladies will come back individually and join me for a night where we can sit down and talk more in depth about your research and some of the evidence you found and your thoughts on Bigfoot. So hopefully that'll take place later this year.
Awesome.
It's a pleasure talking to you ladies. Thank you.
You too.
You're welcome.
He has a deep voice, doesn't he? Very.
That was Sharon.
That was Sharon. Very deep voice.
You're an awesome co-host, Fred.
Well, thank you, ladies, again for coming on. Kathy Strain, Monica Rollins, Sharon Lee, and Melissa Hovey Larson. It's a real privilege and an honor to talk to you ladies tonight as we wrap up Crypto Month here on BTE Radio. You guys have a great night and a great rest of your week.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric, for having me.
We'll talk with you soon. Bye. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, there they go, the ladies of Bigfoot Field Research, some of my favorite ladies in the field, and very highly respected by yours truly. They do a wonderful job, and I'm very proud to know all of them. So we wrap up Cryptid Month. What a great month of having great guests on the program each and every week for the past month, and it's been pretty well received, so we'll more than likely do it again later in the year. Fred, it's been a great time tonight having you on. You did a great job in the co-host contest. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much, Eric. It was a great time.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, and we enjoyed having you here. And again, I want to remind everybody, tonight at 10 o'clock, and that's just in 3 minutes from now, voting begins for the new co-host position here at BTE Radio. So you have 7 candidates to select from. And the voting poll or the widget is up on our Facebook page. It's on our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. Or you can email me privately at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com and tell me who you think the best co-host was and who you'd like to have as a permanent co-host. And next Sunday night at 8 o'clock, I'll make that announcement, and we'll welcome a brand new co-host here to BTE Radio permanently. So again, Fred, great job tonight, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you very much.
Well, folks, that brings Cryptid Month to an end and brings our show to an end here tonight. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Thank you for the phone call. Sorry I wasn't able to get to all of them. The hour and a half just flew by really quickly. And a lot of great questions. I wasn't able to get to all those as well, but did my best, and hopefully we did get some of those questions answered for you. Remind you that we are on every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can find us on the web at para-x.com or the Para-X Radio Network. You can find us at planetparanormal.com. You can find us on tunein.com. Just type in Para-X, and it'll take you right to the link where you can hear us. On podcast, you can find us at a bunch of places, and you'll hear that announcement coming up here in just a minute. But that about wraps things up for me and for my co-host, Fred Kracke from Nebraska. And thanks for tuning in tonight, and we'll catch you guys all next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern start time. Until then, have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.
For listening to Beyond the Edge Radio. Tune in live every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time here on the Para-X Radio Network and Planet Paranormal. You can find tonight's show along with all our archive shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic, Podbean, Blueberry, Parapods, Planet Paranormal, and the Para-X Radio Network. You can find all these links and more on our official website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. Music used on tonight's show was done so with permission of Midnight Syndicate. Visit their website at midnightsyndicate.com. Got feedback, questions, comments? We'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on BTE Radio. Beyond the Edge Radio is a Beyond the Edge entertainment production heard here on Planet Paranormal and the Para-X Radio Networks.